Hey guys, this is Ash.
This is Shiashi.
This is Maggie, and you're listening to We Are Resilient. November 1st, 2023 marks the 2-year anniversary for the We Are Resilient podcast. Throughout these 2 years, we have covered 93 cases of MMIW stories, many of which are still unsolved today.
Well, I can't believe it's been 2 years that we started this. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. It's gone by so fast.
It really has.
So not only have we just covered 93 stories, but we've also done presentations all over, virtual and in person, to bring awareness to this issue that we've been talking about for 2 years.
So throughout these 2 years, we have learned a lot. One thing that I continue to learn more and more about is the jurisdictional issues that Indigenous people face in society today. What is something that you guys have learned that really sticks out?
I think it's just the magnitude of cases there are. I feel like we've covered a lot of stories, but there's so many more that we haven't even touched on.
I think for me, just kind of following on what Ash is talking about is, you know, we knew MMIW is an issue. It's a big problem, but I didn't realize the magnitude. You know, you talk about jurisdictional issues, but we talk about how things play out in court, how these perpetrators are sentenced. Is justice ever truly really served? You know, when we look at cases just from family members trying to report their loved ones missing and the barriers they face there. I mean, from the moment a woman goes missing, Indigenous people are facing barrier after barrier just to get some semblance of justice or help with these women. And I didn't quite understand how bad it really is until we kept going case after case. And it just, stuff that you think is would make be common sense is just not happening. And the unfairness of it all, it really is overwhelming the more we do these cases.
I think something too is that always sticks out to me is just how prevalent it is today.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cover stories from the 1970s where it feels like the same thing is happening in 2023. So that's something that really sticks out to me too, is that the situation seems unchanged.
Yeah, we talk about this. Like it's almost sharing the same story over and over again. It feels like we're telling the same story, and that you're right, nothing's changed, because the barriers that were there 30, 40, 50 years ago are still here today in 2023.
And also the huge lack of media coverage. It's hard to find information. Like we've stated many times before, it's hard to find information about these stories of these women because there's just none. There's a lack of acknowledgement as people and what's happened to them. And there's just a lack of acknowledgement finding justice for these women.
And a lack of just caring, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lack of reporting and the lack of information. Again, we knew it was an issue in some capacity. And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, personally with each other. But again, I didn't realize how bad the lack of reporting was until Gabby Petito went missing. And I didn't understand it until we looked at it and saw how everybody came together to try and find her. But yet in that same state, there's 710 missing Indigenous people. And where is the coming together to try to find them in that one state, let alone the whole country? So I didn't really get it until I saw it play out in real time and watched it play out. And you're seeing everybody come together for this person, but we're not getting that same energy for women of color. It's really unfair.
It really is. And another thing that I think we all have learned is just how scary the statistics around domestic violence are. We mentioned this in conversation a few weeks ago, Shiashi. We talked about how concerning the statistics around strangulation in a domestic violence situation is. And according to a report from the Family Justice Center, the line is thin between causing loss of consciousness and causing death. Strangling another person comes right before homicide on the continuum of violence. Strangulation that stops short of killing may cause significant health consequences, both physical and psychological. It goes on to say, when a victim says she cannot remember what happened, law enforcement or family may be frustrated, thinking she is trying to protect her attacker. That may not be it at all. According to medical experts, our memory is in the part of the brain that dies first when there is lack of oxygen. Out of the 93 cases we have covered, we have documented that 38 of these cases had clear documentation of domestic violence. But we know that this number is probably higher, as many domestic violence situations go unreported. There can be many factors that play into why, but just a few that we have learned from the stories we covered are: fear that no one will believe the abuse, emotional or mental abuse, and lack of financial resources. Two stories stick out to me the most when we talk about DV issues in the stories we have covered, and those are the stories of Candace McCulley-Kehoe and Maddie Bills. Both of these stories are absolutely tragic, and I think about how young they were at the time of their deaths and how much trauma they had endured from a domestic violence situation prior to their deaths.
You know, anytime we do presentations, we always tend to highlight, again, like you're talking about cases that really seem to affect us or stick with us. And mine has always been Ashley Aldridge out of Nebraska. And I had a really tough time covering her case. Well, a lot of these cases deal with domestic violence, but hers, there were certain situations that she was in that I had read about that I had been through personally, you know, in a not healthy relationship. And so it's really hard when you're reading these and you can kind of see yourself in these situations. And just the fact that her case still remains unsolved. And a lot of these cases, we all have a pretty good idea of who the perpetrator is. And a lot of it comes back to domestic violence and being in these really violent relationships. But hers always really, really sticks with me anytime we have discussions about MMIW.
I think what bothers me too is a lot of times it seems like people notice the signs of abuse happening. And there's always stories of like, you know, we saw that he was really mean to her, and people kind of just overlook it, thinking it's just normal. Mm-hmm. So that's something that really bothers me too, is the normalcy of domestic violence situations. And we know just how tragic it can be. I mean, even to know that, you know, strangulation is a domestic violence charge in most states. And basically that is right before death. So that is really concerning too.
That's scary. You know, and you're right, because we all know, we all have friends or people that we know of that are in really, really unhealthy relationships. And I think the hard part is because those behaviors are so normalized that they don't realize really how unhealthy it is. So when we talk about breaking cycles, it's hard to do that when people don't realize they're in the cycle in the first place.
Or it's all you've known.
Yeah. So you don't know any different.
You don't know what a healthy relationship is.
Right.
And you've talked about that before, Ash, where the chaos theory kind of shows that, you know, what you grew up in and what you've witnessed is kind of what you perpetuate in your own life. Mm-hmm. And that is a hard cycle to break because, like you said, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And if it's what you've lived in, it's what you continue to live as. And that's really hard, especially in Indigenous communities, because violence and abuse has been longstanding.
Generations.
Another story that haunts me is a story of Livy Lewis, who actually was not even with her murderer at the time of her death. She just happened to be at the same party as him, and later that night he murdered her out of jealousy. Another issue that is evident in the cases that we have covered is that if an Indigenous woman is missing, there is not much effort put into finding her whereabouts. And Ash, you just kind of talked on this a little bit ago about how there's nothing in the media, especially if the woman had previous issues with substance abuse. 26 out of the 93 cases that we have covered, the victim is still classified as missing or their whereabouts are unknown. Out of those 26 cases, 7 of these women have been victims of domestic violence, and we know that statistics show that the percentage of females murdered by an intimate partner was five times higher than for males.
So 26 are still missing?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
But we know that by the cases we've covered that if there is a history of substance abuse, the most common theme is, especially if they're missing, is, oh, well, she went off on her own.
Well, I immediately think of Olivia Lone Bear. You know, Ash talks about her in the presentations we do, mm-hmm. because her story, it just blows my mind that, you know, you got family reporting her missing. And what did you say, Ash, that the police told her family when they tried to report her?
She may have run off to get married, or she just would take a break, but she'll be back.
And that's always the common theme, especially like if they, you know, if they were last seen going to a bar, they mm-hmm. think, oh, well, she just ran away and left her family. And we know as mothers that even if you struggle, you know, a lot of times those women still want to come back home to their kids.
Mm-hmm. If you can consider Pepita Redhair, she went to go visit her boyfriend and, you know, she's missing. And from what he's told authorities is that they apparently got into an argument and she left the bar with another man. And her family's just like, no, that's not her. So you hear it's a lot of victim blaming and a lot of finger pointing when it comes to women in general when things like this are concerned, especially when there's incidences or reports of domestic violence. Somehow, you know, we bring this on ourselves and we don't look at the perpetrator or hold the perpetrator accountable.
It's crazy to me, too, that there could be circumstantial evidence like history of domestic violence and it's still victim blaming. Why is it not taken more seriously is always the question I ask myself.
Or they get questions like, well, why did she say, we just talked about this with Jessie Waters when we covered her case. She filed a protection order, but she was still seen with him after she had filed, you know, got that filed and granted. And it's like, if it was as easy as just leaving, then women would leave. But it's never that easy. And I don't know why people have such a hard time really understanding that when the data shows that leaving a domestic violence situation is like one of the most dangerous things you can do. It's a dangerous time for you. You know what I mean? So it's like, why are we continuously pointing fingers and victim blaming or saying, why didn't she just leave? Or that was me. If that was me, you know, I wouldn't take that. I'd be gone. You know, it's like, you don't know. You don't know till you're in it.
So out of the 93 cases, 13 of these cases, the official manner of death is also listed as undetermined. And this is something that we also run into. These victims are deceased. They were found deceased. Actually, that's more than that because we added more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So 15 out of the 93 cases are listed as undetermined. A lot of times this happens when they were found on the side of the road. They were found and say, or they say it was due to the elements that they were found deceased. Mm. In addition to that, there are 11 cases that we have covered that are considered accidental. But we know, based off the fact that we've covered these stories, that there are circumstances that tell us that the accidental cause of death probably needs to be looked into further.
Could you name one that was listed as that was accidental?
Linda Beatty, Kiara Kosho, Renee Davis, Aaliyah Gaton Wells, Allison Highwolf. Jade Wagon was actually considered accidental.
I don't know how the Kiara Lee Kosho was considered accidental. That poor baby was just beaten
and
blind. Remember that? She was beaten blind. She couldn't walk.
Olivia Lone Bear is considered undetermined because her death was never ruled a homicide. They said they couldn't determine if she was actually murdered, but she was buckled in the passenger seat of a car.
How does that make any sense?
It doesn't.
A lot of them don't because in a lot of these stories we've covered, even on just our side, just reading news articles, it sounds like there's suspicious circumstances around what happened to them. And I just don't accept undetermined.
I don't either. Or, no. You know, in some cases, accidental either. Because an accident should truly be an accident, you know? Like something tragic, completely something that you could not prevent or something that you did not know anything about. Not someone winding up dead on the side of the street because someone got hit by a car. Aaliyah Gaton Wells, she was off the side of the road with another child, and she was hit by a car and left for dead.
Well, think about Jessie Waters. We just covered her. I think it was the Native Son News saw pictures from the autopsy and stated there was tire marks on her abdomen, but yet her death was considered suspicious.
Yeah, so how would that...
Like, what else would it be?
It feels like if, you know, the homicide manner of death was used, then at least there would be some effort put into finding what happened to her. But when it's undetermined or accidental, it feels like they just write it off.
Yeah, that's how it felt with Selena Not Afraid. That was early on.
Yeah. It's just like in the Sherrianne Moodedfoot story that we covered, where she was found behind the liquor store and was taken to the hospital. And her family reported there was obvious marks on her body where she'd been beaten, where she'd been assaulted. In her case, she was ruled an accidental homicide. And it's like, what does that mean? An accidental homicide? So someone did this to her? And her family had to fight for them to even look into her case further. And it's still unsolved.
Well, even now, you know, the headlines say she was beaten to death, but no one even knows what really happened to her. And in the beginning, they didn't want to believe that she had beaten to death. They just thought that she had passed out behind a building and died.
Yeah. And her family had to fight for them to look into her case.
Well, it's just like the Iris Whistling Elk story, too.
I was just about to say that. I was looking that up because that one blows my mind. Because they were saying that she had fell
multiple times and hit her head. Yes.
And then she's, you know, found dead in this ditch. And it's like, it's an accident.
Which is insane.
Yeah. It's just such an easy way to brush off these cases.
Well, that, and I don't know if you guys saw this story recently, but I saw a headline article a few days ago, and it said that a bartender had been charged with 2 counts of negligent, it might have been manslaughter, because he overserved 2 underage teens and they wrecked and died. So in this situation, the children or the teens that died were white. Their case got prosecuted all the way down to the bartender that served them. But then you have Iris Whistling Elk, who she was drunk too, right? Wasn't she drinking?
I think she was drinking, yeah.
And they presumed that she fell and hit her head multiple times and just wrote it off as, oh, well, she was just a drunk Indian who fell and caused her own death. But in other cases, and I'm very thankful that that case, you know, someone was being charged for negligence. But at the same time, it's like, why doesn't that same narrative happen to the cases that we cover?
There's an extreme lack of fairness when it comes to these cases.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, just saying that she fell multiple times and caused her own death is just...
It's just like the hypothermia. You know, in a lot of stories we've heard, hypothermia is the cause of death.
Mm-hmm. Hypothermia is the big one. None of these stories add up, especially when they're ruled unknown or accidental. None of these makes sense. I don't know. The more cases we do, I know there's been a few that we've talked about that we've gotten really overwhelmed with just the, again, lack of fairness. But the fact that even just reading the details in news reports, none of it makes sense. We're like, how does this even happen?
Well, even, you know, the Ella Mae Begay case, and that case is still open. They did charge the man for her murder, but he's not been sentenced. But her body's never been found.
Just like in Faith Lindsay, you know, he confessed to killing her, but there's still no body.
Yeah. I can't imagine how these families feel having, you know, having a little bit of closure, but never being able to put your family member to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And that should cause more uproar. I mean, Ella Mae Begay was an elderly Navajo woman, and you hear nothing about that in the media.
That's why it's so rare when you have cases like Jamie Yazzie, where her remains are found and she's actually being, you know, her family gets to bring her home and have like a proper burial. And that's rarely the case in a lot of these that we cover.
Something else too is that when people think of MMIW and the violence that is committed against these women, many times it's thought that the violence only comes from a domestic relationship. But we know that this isn't the case. Like Ella Mae Begay, you know, that was just a stranger who came into her home and probably took her away and murdered her. But we have also covered stories of teenagers, children, and even toddlers who have been subject to violence and murder at the hands of someone else. Something that bothers me the most about that is these children also fall into the category of many of the MMIW, and that is that their stories are often unheard of. A few stories that I, you know, just remembered myself was Anthonette Caidito. Her story really got to me, especially when we heard the audio clip of the potential 911 call of her.
Mm-hmm.
That one still bothers me today, and she's still missing, right, Ash?
Yeah. No answers, no clues, nothing.
Another one was Aaliyah Gadon Wells, which we covered a little bit earlier, but her death was listed as accidental, and it's currently still in court proceedings. The woman that was driving the vehicle that hit and killed her had refused to come to court multiple times because she said that she was unwell.
She was too unwell to come to court.
She was too unwell to come to court, so they continued it. And that is still in currently in court proceedings now.
That's wild. Hold her accountable. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand the wait or the prolonging things.
Who was the story you covered that she lived with her adoptive mom and brother and her brother?
Courtney Holden.
That one was a wild case.
That one, I mean, that was one of the first ones we covered, too. That was the first story I wrote, actually.
That was episode 3.
Yeah, that was the first story I ever wrote. And that one, you know, that one was so crazy because there were so many things that led to the people who clearly did something to Courtney. But they said the same story as, oh, she just went off on her own. She was an adult, so, you know, she just left and got married to some trucker. And police did try to look into that a little bit, but it wasn't as urgent as it needed to be for something to be found. And we don't even know the last time Courtney was seen because she was being withheld from society by this foster family.
You know what's crazy about that too is it wasn't even until after she went missing that neighbors reported like the things they've saw. Like, you know, at one point Courtney tried to leave and the stepbrother grabbed her and picked her up and carried her back in the house.
Carried her over his shoulder.
Over his shoulder.
Like, not like playfully,
you know? And nobody thought, you know what, let me call authorities because this don't look right. They just went about their business. Like, there are some things where you don't know what's going on, you don't know the situation, but there are some things where it does warrant a call or some level of concern. Be like, I don't know what this is. It doesn't look right. Can you please just check it out? And neighbors saw things and didn't say anything.
Another story of a teenager was Tristan Gray. And we touched on that one a little bit, but her cause of death is undetermined.
And that was Selena Not Afraid's sister.
Yeah.
She was the one that was hit by a car.
Mm-hmm. And we know who did it. And he fled the scene because he said he was afraid for his life.
But nothing's been done.
Another one that we briefly touched on earlier, too, is Kiara Kosho, which was 4 years old at the time of her death. And her death was listed as accidental.
There was no way, in my opinion.
So we've covered a lot of cases from many different tribes in many different states. But here are some significant statistics. We have covered 10 cases from California, 8 from Oklahoma, 11 from Washington State, 9 from Montana, 5 from Nebraska, 5 from New Mexico, and 9 from our home state of North Carolina. There are currently 574 federally recognized tribes in the United States today, and those tribes reside in many states across the U.S.
It's just wild to hear the numbers because it feels like we've covered so many, but we know the reality is that we've barely even cracked the surface.
Yeah, and you know, we have created our own database that we're using to kind of get these statistics, but even then, we're missing information. Sometimes we have trouble finding their tribe. Sometimes we have trouble finding their date of birth. But even our database is more comprehensive than the one that the BIA has started. And that's concerning.
What do they have listed?
I don't remember. We covered it in the last episode. The BIA database only has like three or four pages of people on it. And only covers three of the stories that we've covered.
Yeah, I remember because we made a comment that we had more listed on ours than they did on theirs.
Yeah.
It's weird when you put it all into perspective just to kind of see the data because, you know, you would think data doesn't lie, but there's probably a lot more out there that we don't know of just from misclassification and not spelling the names right. And there's a lot of information out there that is just unknown. But we know MMIW is an epidemic. It's epidemic levels. And the fact that the numbers are probably nowhere near as high as they probably should be is scary.
You know, out of these unsolved cases, it's concerning to me that there's only a few listed on the BIA website that they're actually looking into. So to me, that says that either, you know, they're unaware of these cases or that they just don't rise to the level of priority for them to reopen or to investigate further. And that's concerning.
Well, that's got to be hard, too, because we follow, you know, how many social media pages are there dedicated to missing and murdered Indigenous women? The cases are constant.
Yeah.
So it's like, where do you start?
That's true, too.
Where do you start? Because, you know, we have women and girls that are actively missing right now. So it's like, where are they at on that? And then where does the importance of covering these cold cases from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, we've got cases we've covered that are like 40 years.
Well, we have cases in our own community. Think about Jacqueline Davis and Marie Walking Stick. You know, we have cases that it's very clear that these women, Jacqueline's body's never been found. She's still missing. That's an open case. No one really knows what happened to her. There's like some rumors in the community, but you know, that's all it is at this point. And people just talk about it like, oh yeah, you know, Jackie went missing. She's never been found. And it's just like part of our everyday life of like, yeah, you know, it happened. Same for Marie Walking Stick. People talk about all the time. Yeah, I used to work with Marie. You know, she was such a great mom. She was always happy. And her case is still unsolved. It happens in our own backyard. And that's scary too.
I think just with the data and with the statistics, it just kind of reiterates that being an Indigenous woman, we're not immune to any of this stuff happening to us because the statistics are so high. You know, we always talk about the statistic where it says the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women is murder. And we're not exempt from that. That's just the way it is. We've talked about it before. If one of us goes missing, we're relying on the other two to really kind of get, you know, lead the charge. Get Dog the Bounty Hunter out here. And we've come to realize that it's always a grassroots effort. How many of these families are left to fundraise and do the work and make the flyers.
Or do the searches.
And do the searches on their own because they don't have any help. Or people aren't taking these missing reports as serious.
I think it's just like what we've talked about 100 times. It's the lack of funding for these positions to look into these cases. There's not even enough FBI agents, like you said before, Maggie, to look into the cases that are already there, not to mention the new ones. And so it is frustrating to just constantly talk about and know that there's no help. No help is coming. They might be looking into it, but they're only going to be able to look into a handful of cases at a time. And so it is daunting because it's just an epidemic because there's so many that are already missing. And there's more that go missing every day. We see the flyers. We see the missing people's posts. And this is just women. We haven't even touched on men. All the men that are missing out there as well. We're just covering women. And there's just as many men missing as there are women. I guess it's just not fair that Indigenous peoples and Indigenous lives are not seen as valued as others.
I think it's before we really dived into MIW and what it is and how prevalent it is. I didn't really understand how bad the issue is. But now that we've done this and, you know, we're 2 years in and there's really not been any change. 2 years is not a long amount of time, but you'd think in 2 years we would see some significant change in processes to help with this problem, and we're not.
So the question we always get asked is, why does this happen? Why is MMIW such an issue today? Experts believe that MMIW has deep roots in colonization and genocide and can be attributed to the lack of protections as a result of systemic racism and erosion of tribal sovereignty dating back more than 500 years. And unfortunately, this narrative still persists today. Just recently, I made a comment on a post regarding how dressing up as someone's culture for Halloween is inappropriate. There were comments from people who were supportive of the initiative, and like always, there were people who felt that we were overreacting, including one of many who said, "Put the peace pipe down and get over it."
What?
Stating that us Indigenous people play out the issues from the past.
You had someone comment, like recently?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
They said,
He said, "Put the peace pipe down and get over it."
Shockingly enough, that's normal.
Yeah,
I know.
When she said that, I wasn't like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe somebody would say that." I was like, "Yeah, people say that." It's not like it's not like especially this time of year, people are going to say that.
But what I can't fathom is how you can listen to all the cases that we even just barely touched on just now, and say that we're overreacting. That it's not an issue, that we are just simply, you know, we need to get over it. Mm-hmm. When our people, there's a genocide today.
Yeah.
It is still happening to our people, and there is still no concern.
Stuff still surprises me. So when I hear comments like that, sometimes I'm just like, I feel like things should be so common sense that we would know better to make comments like that. But we really don't.
Or we would respect each other enough to say, "Yeah, you know, I get where you're coming from. Your people did endure a lot. Like, I'll do better."
But just to come right out and just be like, put the peeps, you know,
well,
like.
You have to understand, they come from an uneducated, unrespectful.
In regards to Indigenous culture.
Yes.
And how it's taught and learned and represented.
It's just sad. You know, on top of MMIW, there's still, like you said, this lack of understanding.
Well, that's blatant racism.
Yeah.
But you also have to think, it's normalized today.
That is true.
That coming up, Thanksgiving is coming up, and you will have schools who will have the Pilgrims and the Indians little play.
They'll play Pocahontas.
Yeah. The headdresses. The yep.
And these schools, educational institutes, are teaching this fictional, stereotypical, racist dialogue to these children. It's racist.
Well, it's a misrepresentation of what Indigenous culture is.
How do you change a narrative that's been the narrative for as long as we can remember? You know, 2 years into this, there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, if you've been with us since the beginning, you know that MMIW, and as we know, is not going away anytime soon. There's still so much work to be done. And if anything, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, "Well, what can I do?" It's a silent epidemic for a reason. We have to talk about it.
So, you know, if you hear a narrative that's incorrect, then correct someone and tell them the true story. Because if we continue on with this narrative of what Indigenous people are in society, this issue will just continue.
So let's just be respectful of one another and take care of one another and look out for each other. And people who are struggling with a missing murdered Indigenous person in their life, let's just take extra care of them, because we know justice is hard to find for these families.
Thank you for listening to We Are Resilient. For links to information found for this episode, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at We Are Resilient Podcast. Send us an email at weareresilientpod@gmail.com or visit us at www.war-podcast.com.